welcome to Valuification of Things, your one-stop podcast on the discussion of value, and especially business value. This is a forum where your host, Sri Sundaram, will be discussing topics on how to quantify value for practically any scenario. Along the way, we will have business leaders and subject matter experts describing their value journey. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this podcast episode.
Hello, everyone. For this edition of the podcast, enjoy this discussion on crafting scalable generative AI solutions for maximum business impact. It was moderated by R.R. Dasgupta from Alliance Sustainability. The participants were yours truly and Andrew Wolf from the Holistics Group.
A very good evening to all of you. We are here with our maiden workshop on crafting scalable generative AI solution for maximum business impact. And today I have with me two stalwarts from the industry, Andrew Wolf and Sri Sundaram, who can hold their fort and have been there and done it. So I will just request each one of them to introduce themselves. Andrew, over to you. Why don't you make a short introduction of yourself?
Thank you, RR. My name's Andrew Wolf. I am a longtime technologist and have worked in the industry, in a variety of industries. Most recently, as a founder of the Holistics Group. Before that, I was at Microsoft for almost 20 years in a variety of roles, both all customer-facing, but focused on technology. And then throughout the years, the focus changed as Microsoft's model shifted to the cloud from selling seats and licenses. And as that happened, our role moved out towards the business to establish a much more strategic relationship with Microsoft's customers. Before that, and interestingly enough, Sri and I both worked at Siemens, actually reporting in the same group, although we didn't know each other at the time. So we've got a long history together. Thank you, RR. Sri?
So thank you, Andrew. So as Andrew mentioned, you know, we certainly were as part of Siemens there, although whenever I saw Andrew, I would turn the other way around. But my background, though, RR, is also similar to Andrew. I grew up as a technologist, right? Primarily in the application development space. Over time, as my career matured, you know, got into technology strategy, business strategy. And then these days, we are heavily invested and focused on the business value of things. Everything that we do, it's all about why do we do it, right? There has to be a business value. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Technology for technology's sake is good as a hobby. But as a business, you have to have the underlying financial foundation for us to go about doing that. So that's kind of my background and that's my passion.
And I like what you said, you know, it cannot be a hobby. And I see here in this part of the country, it sometimes becomes a series of POCs which does not scale. And it therefore does not create impact. And by the way, Sri, when did I meet you? It was the year 2013. And my first Tech Ready. And lo and behold, we were at the Seahawks Stadium. And you were sitting behind me and we chatted up. And okay, there was beer and other stuff flowing. And we got to know each other that time, okay? So that's many years back, actually.
I remember that.
So
yes.
Many years. You remember that?
Yes.
So which is saying that, you know, when you work with like-minded people like you folks, and I am one of the believers that ultimately it is the convergence of human ingenuity and the advanced technologies, and I don't want to call it AI at this point of time, because that can kind of roll off to a very different thing. So with that in view, Andrew, I'm turning to you to speak through or ask you about what are you seeing in two specific industries, which of course is scaling here in this part of the world, but not really getting to the point of creating a lot of impact. And these two industries are manufacturing, number one. Number two is the hospitality industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, what a great set of industries, because they're alike in some ways, but very different in other ways, with manufacturing being extremely focused on deep operational efficiency. In fact, one of our clients right now is focusing on how do they elevate an already extraordinarily efficient process using AI and applying it. Whereas the hospitality industry is organized around delivering an experience to their clients and customers, which means that they look at things in a slightly different way. And at Holistics, when we talk about digital transformation and change within an industry, we talk about it across those two dimensions, which is operational efficiency and the customer experience. So the selection of those two industries is perfect. The other piece to add is that with nascent technologies like generative AI, which has been around now for almost 5 years, so if we look at it as coming to light in 2020 and then really hitting the mainstream in 2023-ish, the way those technologies are applied begins with a general application and selection of use cases that align to the kind of key elements of the industry, right? So for manufacturing, that might be driving operational efficiency to the next degree of effectiveness. And for hospitality, that's what more can they do to extend and enhance that experience that their customers are having. So we're starting to see use cases that are general in nature, and now those use cases slowly become applied to these different industries. And then once they're applied in that industry, then the industry really, that tends to take it in one of the areas where they improve or refine these use cases is by making it contextual for their industry or even their local markets in some cases. So in both of those industries, we're starting to see that. And I think it's fair to say we can extend that to just about any other industry when we're talking about generative AI. It's important to realize that generative AI is fundamentally different from other types of artificial intelligence that we've seen. And I think we'll get into that more specifically as we talk through this. But specifically, we're talking about generative AI.
When we talk about these specific industries and we talk about generative AI, let's keep it to that. I would venture and dare say that industries themselves are going to get transformed.
Yep.
Because Precisely. What they thought never possible, right, is now possible. Now, imagine the hospitality industry. And, you know, I visited a lot of manufacturing plants. So the reception would take away my, mobile and say, this is secure and all that. I said, you know, next time I come in, my facial recognition should be enough for my identity. Why do I need a pass every time I come to your factory? Mm-hmm. So I'm going off on 14th for a short break to a place called Nasik. Now, you know what I liked about it is I booked and I paid in advance. And, you know, I got a call back and saying that, do you have any special requirements? Now, that's not a star category. It's a homestay kind of a thing. But, you know, star category, and I don't want to name that chain. The CDO said, I want a session for my board covering every tool, Midjourney and whatnot. So I said, why do you want to do that? He said, no, that's what they want. Then I had to back off and say, we don't do that. I mean, I at least wouldn't do that because I don't know which background and what they know about, you know, just by showing them tools. It's a lot of this. I didn't tell him that. I said, it's like a kid in a candy store. I mean, you have so many candies that you want to choose. Absolutely. You're on the point in saying that generative AI is going to be the starting block. And it's through those that other forms, through generative AI, the other forms of AI are really forming, whether you call it agentic AI or swarm technology or whatever. So over to you, Sri. You know, you've been in the tech industry for I mean, you look really old. I mean, in the sense that
donkey's ears, yes.
So have I. So let's just put it to that. Jokes apart, technology sector. I mean, that itself is so awe-inspiring, and I'm just not talking about the technology vendors like Microsoft or Amazon or Google. I'm talking about services companies. What do you see in them?
So, a couple of things that technology services and even products industry see is their proximity to the technology. By being closer to the technology, they're much more comfortable with these sorts of innovative and emerging techs that perhaps a typical industry such as hospitality or manufacturing would take a little bit longer to adopt. And the reason for that is they know the bits and bytes of what's going on for the most part. Maybe not at a deep scientific PhD level, but certainly they know what are the aspects that needs to go on into that particular technology or adoption of the technology. Which is why you see the earliest use cases of generative AI and AI to the extent are in those technology spheres. For example, coding, right? Most organizations, including technology organizations, including professional service organizations, have adopted the aspect of Gen AI into their coding practices. And I can speak from almost firsthand experience that the coding proficiency or productivity is increased by about 70%. You know, in yesterday's world, there was areas like Stack Overflow or forums and things like that, where you would post a question and it'll take you a day or two to get a response back. Until then, you're stuck in your advanced coding. But now you can get immediate feedback. That's one area where we see technology firms and professional services firms get into that. The second aspect of that is, innately, most professional services firms deal with a lot of documentation. How so? By creating proposals, right? When you send technical specifications, when you write up documentation for the systems, so they deal with a lot of essentially wordy subjects that typically take a long time to do. Now, with technologies such as Gen AI, these are a matter of seconds, where you put in your code and then it comes up with a basic amount of documentation or documents, if you will, that can then be developed further on. So these are two use cases that I see almost right off the bat, and because of that, you see there's much more advancements of the use of Gen AI in technology and services industry as perhaps compared to the other ones.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, so let me just. So in my experience, for example, clients would typically ask us for a request for information first and a request for proposal. And then a whole battery of people would get in and wordsmith it. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Then it was such a massive waste of time, right? And it was just draining me all the time, because all those people who were supposed to be business legal and supposed to be technical, they were not writing business. They were writing technical specifications, which I knew at the end of the day the business wouldn't accept. Second aspect I want to talk about is, we had these days of OLTP systems. Mm-hmm. Okay, now OLTP systems, and then the cloud came in, right? So there was this, in that era, there was this notion of ETL, extract, transform, and load. Now, I want you to comment on what has happened to ETL. I mean, does ETL even exist today?
So, great question there. It's been a while since I heard the term OLTP, right? OLTP for our viewers is really online transaction processing.
Yes.
Now, ETL, if you would ask if there's a space for ETL, it still is. There is still a space for EKU because the extraction, transformation, and loading of the data from one system to the other or from one entity to the other still needs to happen. Yeah. However, if you think about the old ETL systems where a lot of these machinations of data, the cleanliness of data had to be done by a person or persons, the data quality to ensure the smoothness of the pipeline between of the transfer, that part can be automated now very clearly, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where, you know, especially if you look at historical patterns of the data, you see that, and GenAI can clearly look at the historical patterns. Last time this particular customer produced transactions of the order of 50 million rupees. Mm-hmm. Today, they're submitting 45 million rupees. Is there an issue there? Because typically in the month of March, you always send 50 million rupees. So those kinds of automatic checks can be done in ETL that mm-hmm. enable further human checks. So that would be one mm-hmm. area. So a lot of the systems that we talk about, fundamentally, they would still exist. It's just that the basic grunge work, the donkey's work, that kind of issues can now be automated, and then the analysts or the workers can now focus on more value-added stuff. Mm-hmm. And Andrew, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to add in that I think there is the generative AI is very good at understanding unstructured data in a way that we didn't have before. So some of that ETL and the data stuff can be handed to the generative AI. However, part of the challenge of generative AI is that it's inherently non-deterministic, right? It's probabilistic. So as a business, you want to get to a situation where you can have repetitive answers using that data and end up with the same result, which is a challenge. And so I think to Sri's point, even though the generative AI is becoming more and more capable in understanding unstructured data, in order to get predictable outcomes, which is what we want in business, you still have to do some manipulation and understanding of the data. Technologies like the Model Context Protocol, MCP, that Anthropic has released recently, is allowing those generative AI, kind of the foundational models, to access data in a more unstructured way. So, for example, you can just point it at folders in your file system now. However, I don't know that the results you would get from that would be the same that you would have from putting that data into a vector store, for example, which these LLMs can understand much more directly. So I think we're at a transition point where things are evolving pretty rapidly. I don't know that the term ETL will last much longer.
I would just like to say that, you know, for example, if you take retail, okay. Now, retail is undergoing massive change. On one side, there are big players. On one side, I shop from friendly neighborhood stores, and I don't mm-hmm. go to the big stores. And I find them very, very customer-friendly. Yeah. Okay? And I don't need to get to the big store because big stores don't assure you quality. So with that kind of a situation, I believe that... I think you're going to soon run out of data to determine what's the market for, let's say, Indian pickle. Okay? Mm-hmm. What's the market size? People are giving up on pickle because it's causing acidity. Mm-hmm. Okay? So then that data of historical in nature is not going to work. So as Elon Musk says, we're going to have synthetic data, you know? What is synthetic data? You actually asking the machine to produce a fresh insights out of, if I might call it, big data, to say where the market is moving. Buying of cars is another. The secondhand sales are plummeting. Some fanciful people are going for the electric mobility. Kind of stuff, but this whole mosaic is changing. So I don't think historical data is going to be the baseline for either probabilistic determination. I think going forward, probabilistic, yes, mm-hmm. but based on what? It's right. not going to be based on historical data.
Yeah, synthetic data is it presents its own challenges, and it's used for training models. So, yes. so back to the idea of Tesla and the training for their full self-drive, for example. Yeah, they don't have millions of drivers out there recording their driving sessions. They create synthetic data to train the model about different events and things like that that might happen while you're driving so that the model understands it. There are two challenges with synthetic data, actually probably many more than two, well, but one of them
I used a wrong term. All I'm saying is that markets are shifting.
Sure, okay. sure.
The whole that market is true pie for, is shifting.
But that is true, RR and Andrew, for almost anything that we do, even statistical analysis, right?
Yes.
The model is only good as the last few scenarios. Things evolve, right?
Yep.
Things evolve. So what was true, even set aside generative AI for a second, things evolve. And because what was true 100 years ago in terms of, longevity of health or people's cultures and behavior is not true anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So just as humans evolve in our thinking, I believe these systems, these generative AI systems, the large language models will also evolve.
Although one of the challenges with data of any type, synthetic or natural, is that the data contains a bias. And without realizing that, then your models and your AI will have a bias in it. And so being cognizant of intentionally training AI specifically, because now we have AI, one of the differences is generative AI is creative. It's not just a pattern matching application, is that when it generates things, it will bring along those biases that exist in the data that it's trained with, whether it's natural or synthetic data. And being cognizant of that is critical, which is why we always talk about at the end, you trust but verify. So trust that the AI is doing what you've asked it to do, but verify that it's done it in a way that doesn't contain bias that would affect your end results. Absolutely critical. And in particular, because businesses laser focused on revenue and profits. And in order to achieve those, you have to be able to implement these AI systems in a real world. It's easy to log on to ChatGPT or Claude or Copilot, pick your tool, but that doesn't mean you can apply that immediately to business. And that's the challenge that many of the business owners in our audience are going to face.
In the industries that you've been exposed to, let's talk about the technology sector. How are they determining the business impact or business value of what they're doing? It's just not revenue. It's more than that. It's market mm-hmm. growth. It's market share. It's mind share. that ultimately resulting in more and more customers coming to these kind of technology services companies.
So that's a great question there, RR. This is where quote an off use cliche. This is where it separates the adults from the kids.
Yes,
you can create all sorts of fantastically cool Gen AI prototypes.
Yep,
that's exactly what they are. But if those prototypes don't scale up to an enterprise level usage or system, it's not of that. It's of limited use. So how do you get past that? First, what you do is you look at the business value of things, as you rightly pointed out. So there's a value model that needs to be associated for enterprises, whatever is appropriate to them. You mentioned the common ones. There is the enterprise productivity, right? We already talked about it. How can you separate the donkey work or the grunge work from the real value added work? So there's that aspect of it. The second aspect of it is improving the overall productivity of a manufacturing plant, for example. Andrew talked about one of the customers improving they're already doing very well. This particular example that Andrew was talking about earlier, they're already doing very well. They're probably one of the leaders in the area, but they still want to do more because they want to stay ahead of the curve, right? So business, going back to business value, what are the typical levers, right? There is the operational efficiencies. Then there is the engagement of the people to do more with less that you talked about, right? There's always that case. Nobody wants to be working, 80 hours a week on a regular basis. That's quite not sustainable, right? The work-life balance has to be maintained. So yes, people today don't talk about work-life balance as a business value, but indeed it is a business value. The more yes, motivated employees are, the better they perform. Think about outshining your competitors. Think about how can you avoid risk and compliance issues through AI. AI can look at things that say, this is not compliant with what you've done before, right? So these are all the areas that a typical business operates in. And if you can quantify that from a dollar perspective, but from a rupee perspective, to say, if I do this, I don't have to do that. And mm-hmm, ultimately, that comes into some sort of an ROI or an internal rate of return. If yes, every organization were to take that diligence and develop that value model into what is in it for them. People talk about, oh, yeah, there's something in it yep, for me. But if you quantify that, that's where we have seen successes in our sphere of the world. RR is, when Andrew and I talk about it, when we do these business value analysis and bring it down to those dollars and cents, rupees and paise kind of thing, that's where the real value of generative AI is.
Yeah. Can I just add that this is a sure, critical piece, particularly in a time with a technology like generative AI, where to Sri's earlier comment, you can create wonderful art of the possible concepts really, really rapidly. So asking what you can do with the technology is the wrong question. The question should be, what should you do as a business with the technology? And this value prioritization framework has to be in place. Otherwise, you're going to run around doing things that might be interesting, but ultimately never move the needle forward for your business, which is always measured in terms of rupees or dollars. So yeah, critical, critical point.
And Andrew, to that point, if you think about some of the stuff, there was a lot of buzz about big data about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yep.
Lots of buzz. Technology companies have actually invested in developing new technologies on that. But ultimately, it kind of leveled off. Why? Because people looked at big data was a panacea of things, but never really saw, how can it really help my company? Big data mm-hmm, works well for companies with big data, right? If you don't have big data, then you cannot do big data in a company. So that was kind of the thing that, so same thing with Gen AI and these kinds of emerging technologies. I'm not saying go with care. I'm saying just go in to see if there is value for your company. If there's value for your company, then absolutely do it. If there's no value for your company, then perhaps it is not the right technology for your industry or for your company.
And I think the board will understand that language.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yep. Because yep, if the company's not, it's like shareholders' returns, right? So if the company is not going to see value from things being done, ultimately it catches up and the board will ultimately turn around and say, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. It just looks very pretty on your annual report, but beyond that, what is it that you're doing?
Right.
Somebody's right, going to ask some tough questions at the end of the day. So business value of things makes a lot of sense, because otherwise it's just doing technology for the sake of doing it,
yes,
and going nowhere with it. So as the old cliche statement goes, one more statement I heard was that if you don't know your destination, any road will take you there.
Yes, exactly.
You walk any road and it will take you there. You want to go to Mount Everest via, somewhere in South India, you can still go. The patterns are going to change. What patterns were held earlier, they're going to morph and change because of the introduction of the new technologies.
Yep. Yes.
Patterns themselves will change. So mm-hmm, I liked one statement which I heard is that the art of the possible itself is going to turn on its head. Mm-hmm. So what you never thought, we said, yeah, art of the possible, but then the art of the possible is going to change and transform what you never imagined could happen earlier. So with that, I think great discussion, both of you. Thank you for your time. And if I can just take a few takeaways from this, what we really summed up, if I can sum up this session, is saying that every industry is going to get transformed. There are cross-industry patterns which are possible, especially related to some of the business operations which are common, like marketing or finance or HR. And if you take themes like productivity or market leadership or all of those things, everything is possible, and more so in the age of what I would call the age of intelligence, generative AI becoming the solid pillar in that context. And the third thing I would peg it on is that business value should be the starting block of any initiative an enterprise should take. Is that a fair sum up, both of you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. On the concept of business value, Andrew and I have published a book where we talk about the business value of AI in one of the chapters. So I would suggest to the audience here to take a look at that and give us feedback on that.
Final thought is that the pace of change in the industry now is so rapid, and for businesses to keep up with that is going to be critical, because AI is going to be a differentiator for many of those businesses, and not just at the enterprise level, but at the mid-market and the mom and pop level. Generative AI will allow them to function in ways that they couldn't before and compete in ways they couldn't before. But the challenge is that the first mover advantage is going to be even more important now because of the pace of change. So understanding and applying generative AI is going to be critical, and doing it soon is going to give you an advantage that your competitors won't have. So just keep that in mind.
Yep. And so I would add to that, saying that companies need help.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because internally, it becomes very difficult. And it's always great to have an outside-in view, a little bit of a detached view of things, where we are looking at hard facts and figures, and then saying, okay, if your industry trajectory is this, first mover advantage, to your point, what will really take you to that point of inflection or changing of orbits, if I may call it? How do you change your orbit to say that you're way ahead of competition? I mean, way ahead of where your competition is. So with that, thank you very much for your time. You can reach us at, you will see the slide where you can reach all of us, and do reach out to any of us. And this is the first of our workshops. We'll be coming back to you with more, with specific deep dives on industries, and then thematically productivity or market leadership, or for that matter, employee health and well-being. We had in the yesteryears the EHS, which is a very, very factory-oriented thing. But I think in the blue-collar work area, EHS is very important. The sanctity of an employee and their productivity, their work-life balance is going to be of immense significance. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Valuification of Things. I hope you enjoyed it and learned something new. If you did, please share this episode with your friends and family, and don't forget to leave a review. We're always looking for ways to improve and bring in the best content possible. If you want to be featured on this podcast, please drop us a line at podcast@valuification.com.